They were beginning here on the top of Nufgimo Medalef, about 7 lines down. Gemara is continuing to discuss what is the end time period in terms of Shemitah for certain fruits and vegetation. When do we say that that is no longer available in the Sadeh so that people no longer can eat it in their houses? As we discussed yesterday, the principle that as long as it's available to the Chayab Sadeh, then one can have it for the Behema in the house or can keep it in their house. So here the Gemara is discussing Tan Rabbanan, Ochlim Banavim, one can eat grapes, Ad Sheyichlu Daliot Shel Uchel, that you can eat the grapes until the last of the grapes is finished off. Now Daliot, Rashi says over here, refers to trellis, or these are the way that they used to string up the grapevines, or put them onto trellises, and that's how they grew fruit in their day. Uchel is a name of a place. A Makom Kramim, as Rashi says, a place that was heavily laden with vineyards. And some have the Girsa that it's Avel or Avel Kramim, which is also another location that was heavy in vineyards. So until the last of the grapes finish from there, you know that there's still grapes available in the region, and you don't have to worry about eating grapes. Im yesh mucharot mehen, ochlim alehem. And if there are later grapes that are still on the vines that are around or available even after those in these specific areas, then you can continue to eat the grapes based on those that are out in the field. You eat in the zeitin, you can eat olives until the last of the olives are finished off in Tekoa. Tekoa is a place that was famous for its zeitin. It's found in the Hare Yehuda, the modern day Tekoa. If you go to there, one of the signs that they have in front of them is about their uniqueness for olives and making olive oil. As the Gemara says, that Tekoa is alpha. Alpha, like Aleph or A, is top quality for oil, and that's the oil that was used in the menorah in the Mikdash. Then until the last olives are finished off in the Gush Chalav. Gush Chalav is in the location, as Rashi says, of Shevet Menashe. Shevet Menashe, who Moshe Rabbeinu gives them the bracha of Tovel B'Shem and Raglo, that they will have plenty of oil in their area of their Shevet, their geographic location. So it refers to that. Means that an ani, a poor person, goes out and picks olives, not on its nof, on its branches, not on its trunk, meaning that there are so few olives that are left out of there that he can't even squeeze a reva alog, quarter log out of those olives. That's when you know you're at the end or the termination of the olives, and you can no longer keep them in the house. It reached the zman habiur for olives. You can eat from the dried figs until the last of the unripened figs come on the trees in Beitini or come off the trees in Beitini. Pagei Beitini are not mentioned as being one of the residual or last areas to have figs on them, but rather they're mentioned in respect to Maser, which is Amar. Over here it's not clear what we have, whether it's a Tznan or Amar Bibi. Pagei Beitini Ve'ahini to Tuvina, with the unripened figs of Beitini and the Tamarim, the dates of a place called Tuvini, Chayavin b'Maser, are obligated to have Maser taken off of them. They're considered to be fruits. They are considered to be Chayavim in Trumot and Maaserot. Now, Ochlim b'Trumarim at Shechlech Ron Shebitzawar. We had this before in the Gemara on the top of Nun Bet Amud Bet, which is that you can eat from the dates until the last ones end in a place Tzowar. Tzowar, which is down in the Bik'ah, the Jordan Valley, in that area which is famous for its palm trees and its dates. So that is the area that's going to have the last of the dates available. So you eat until that place of Tzohar, which is probably famous for its dates. That they're only true about the dates that are up near the top of the clusters or the branches, but not about the dates that are found on in the trunk or have fallen off and are not easily accessible to the animals. Viramini, is that really true? Ochlim banavim ad Pesach. You're allowed to eat grapes until Pesach time. Bizeitim ad Atzeret. Olives until Shavuot. Begrugurot ad Chanukah. And the dried figs until Chanukah time. Batmarim ad Purim. And the dates until Purim. Ve'amar Rabibi, Rabbi Yochanan, Tarte Batraita Machlif. Rabibi says that Rabbi Yochanan flips the latter two, which is that Grugorot really at Purim, and the Tamarim are at Chanukah. So we have a difference here, meaning that we just said all of these locations that have specific determination for whether it's olives, grapes, dates, figs, for where they're the last ones to go. Now, all of a sudden, I have a list of time periods that have nothing to do with the location. They have to do with the calendar. So, Gemara says, first of all, idi v'idi chad shirahu. They turn out to be roughly about the same measurement, meaning the measurement in time on the calendar is similar to the measurement of these locations when those fruits run out in those locations. V'vaitema haktani behedjo. We already said in the above, when we spoke about the different locations, that if there are later times or later places, then we eat on them. So neither of these are exact. These are estimations. Whether it's the time period of the year through the calendar, or whether it's by location, those are the most likely locations or most likely times when they'll be around. But if they exist in these places or other places after that, that's fine as well. So it's not about the exact timing or the exact location, it's about what happens. These are just ways to give people indication of where to look or what's the likely scenario. Tanya, Reb Shimon Gamliel Omer, Siman Arim Milin. Mountains are covered in Milin. If you see Milin on them, then it is a mountain. Now, Milin, it's not clear what they are. The translation roughly is an oak tree that has or produces gallnuts. Siman Amakim Degalim, a sign of a valley is palm trees. Simana Nechalim, a sign of a river or a river bed, is Kanim reeds. Simana Shvela, a sign of the plains, is Shikmaz the sycamore. Afob Shein Raya LeDavar, even though this is not an absolute proof, Zecha LeDavar, it does give some credence to this. Shenemar, Vaiten HaMelech HaDekesef Yushalayim, Kavanim. It was so wealthy, Shlomo HaMelech, and there was so much money, that he put this silver in Yushalayim, Kavanim, they were like stones. Vetarazim Natan Kishkamim. And the cedar wood was so plentiful, it was like the sycamore asher b'shvela l'rov, that are spread out on the plains in numerous quantities. So we see here that the sycamore is associated with the plains. So now the Gemara says, what's the value of this information? Siman arim milim, siman amakim dekalim. The fact that the milim are a sign of the mountains, and the siman of the makim are dekalim, nafkamina lebikurim. That has implications as far as bikurim are concerned. It's not. Eme v'im bikurim mishivat minim. First of all, we have a gzera shava of eretz, and from the eretz that's mentioned by the Shivat Aminim to the eretz that's mentioned by the Bikurim, and from that we learn out that only the Shivat Aminim are brought as Bikurim. That's number one. Number two is that they're only brought from the best, not from anything that is subpar or not the highest quality. So therefore, you bring it from the Shivat Aminim, velo midgalim shebaharim, you can't bring dates from the palm trees on the mountains, because the palm trees in the valleys are better palm trees and better quality dates, and that's where you bring them from. And you don't bring them from the fruits that are in the valleys, rather from the fruits that are on the mountains, because we're looking for the higher quality produce. And for Bikurim, you can only bring Mishvat Aminim and the highest quality items. So these two Simanim are indications of whether they're a Har or an Emek. And Har and Emek has implications in terms of where you bring the Bikurim from, because you bring the fruits from the Harim, and you bring the dates from the Amakim, from the valleys. Siman Nachalim Kanim, the sign of a river is Kanim, are reeds. Nafkamina L'Nachleitan, that's a Nafkamina for Egla Rufa, which has to be done next to a river. Anachleidan, or the riverbed, and the reeds are a sign of that. Siman l'shvela shikma, a sign of the plains is the sycamore, and afkamina l'mekach u'memkar, that has to do with commerce, that if someone's selling you a shvela, then they should have a sycamore on it. Hashladadi d'hochi, now that we reach that point, or that's an afkamina, kulu nami l'mekach u'memkar, you could say that that's an afkamina for all of them. For Mekach u'Memkar, if someone sells you a mountain, if someone sells you a valley, the expectation would be that you'd find palm trees in the valley, that you'd find milim on the mountainsides, you'd find sycamores in the shvela, and that would identify them. If he promises you a shvela, then it should have these items in them. Now, the Gemara here brought a proof from the Pasuk. It's an absolute proof, even though it says that the shvela is full of sycamores, because all it says is, if there are sycamores, that it's a plain. But it doesn't say that if there are no sycamores, it's not a plain. Meaning that has a positive stint about it, but it doesn't tell you that the opposite is true necessarily, and that's why it's only a zeicha davar, it's not a raya gimura. Right now we move on to the next Mishnah, which is, makom shenagul limkor behemat dakal nechrim mochrim. In locations where they sell the lighter, weaker animals to non-Jews, mochrim, you can sell them. These are animals that are usually kept around either for their milk, or for their wool, or for their meat. They're not used to work. They're not beasts of burden in any sense. So there, makom, where they have the minhag to sell them, they sell them. Makom, shelo nagu limkor, and places where they don't sell them, ein mochrim, you can't sell them. Ubechol makom, ein mochrim, lahem beim agasa. So the ikar gzeira, or the ikar takana, has to do with selling work animals, heavy duty animals, to the non-Jews. The problem being that we have problems in terms of Sheilas, Chirut, and Nisione. The problem of the fact that if the Jew still owns the animal and either lends it to the non-Jew, or he rents it to the non-Jew, or he gives it to him to test, to ride, the Jew is responsible that his animal should rest on Shabbat. So they were afraid if we allowed transactions with these animals, that it would come to the possible point or position that they would end up engaging these animals and working them on Shabbat when it still belonged to the Jew. And so because of that, they ushered all transactions with these animals. So certain locations, in order to enforce or to maintain restriction, extended it not only to Behemot Gasot, but also to Behemot Dakot. Because Behemot Dakot doesn't matter because you don't work with them, so it's not really an issue in terms of working on Shabbat, but they extended to Behemot Dakot in order to make it stick or more enforceable that the Gzeirah of selling the Behemot Gasot to the Nachrim. Agalim, Usayachin, Shlemim, Ushvurim. This includes even calves, foals, whether they are healthy or whether they have injuries to them. All of these things are included in this restriction, despite the fact that calves and foals don't do work because they're too young, and the fact that Shvurim, if they have injuries to them, then they can't work. Despite the fact the Gezerah or the Takanah was all-inclusive, and there were no exceptions, even for those animals that they themselves can't work. Yehuda Matir B'Shvurah. Yehuda is Matir B'Shvurah because nobody's going to keep around an injured animal. When you buy an injured animal, you buy it to Shecht right away and it's used for its meat. You're not going to keep it around. The fear of the Tanakhama is that if you keep around the Shvurah, then people are going to make a mistake because, see, a Jew sold them that animal, then they'll think they can sell them even a Shlema. But Rabbi Yehuda says you'll never have that Chashash because the Shvurah will be eliminated, it'll be shechted in very short order. Ben Meteira Matir B'Sus. Ben Meteira says that you can sell horses because horses are not used for work, they're only used to ride on, and riding on them is not real Malacha on Shabbat because Chayno Seat Atzmo. So because of that, Ben Peteira believes that selling a horse is not a problem because even if Malacha is done, it's only a restriction midrabanan and not a restriction midoraita. So to have a takana for something that's only restricted midrabanan, we don't do. And therefore Ben Peteira says you can sell horses to the non-Jews. And Tosafot discusses this in Avodah Zarah. The main sugya of this is found. He says that that is the reason that we today sell horses and we transact with the non-Jews in these animals is for because of this heter, or this idea that the assumption being that these animals are not going to be used for work or not going to be utilized in such a way that it's going to cause a problem in terms of the gzeirah. In places where they had roasted meat on the night of Pesach, you can eat it. In places where they have the minhag not to eat it, then you may not eat that on the night of Pesach. The fear here is that it looks like kodshim b'chutz, it looks like you have it, you brought a korban Pesach. Rashi in all these cases seems to suggest that the problem here is that the meat itself, the roasted meat itself, you're going to say that this is Pesach or Zu Pesach, and that's going to cause the problem. Tosafot says that that can't be the issue here because it's not an issue about calling something a Pesach afterwards because after the fact or when it's meat, you can't call it a Pesach. As Rashi points out, it's Mitnadev Shalokaderach Mitnadvim. He's donating or he's making Kodesh, not like the normal way you make a Kodesh. So it doesn't work. It's not really Kodesh, but it just, people have suspicions about it. Tosafot, on the other hand, says that's not the issue. The issue is that people might think that he was Makdish the animal when it was still alive. And his Makdish the animal is still alive, and now what he's eating is from that animal that he was Makdish. So the Chashash here is that it might look like Kodshim Bachutz. Whether for Rashi it means that you're making it, even though it's not the normal way today, you're making it into Kodshim now. Or for Tosafot, that you once made it into Kodesh, and now you're utilizing it. So that's the fear here, that it looks like Kodesh. So in a place where they have the Minog not to eat it, for that reason, they don't eat it. In a place where they don't have the Minog, they did eat it, because they weren't worried about that. Amar Rav Yehuda, Ma Basul Adam Shomar Basar Zeh LePesach Hu. Person can't say, this meat is for Pesach. Rashi again says, Afil Shchuta Kvar, even if it's Shechted. Tosafot again says that the fear here is not about the Shechted meat, but rather, when you say this is Pesach, it means that you made it Pesach already, before it was shechted. So that's the fear over here. Now you can't say this. It looks like you're being makdish to behema. And as if you are eating kodeshim b'chutz. That's why on the Seder night, on the Leil Pesach, when it comes to the three things that one must say to Yotzei Dei Chavoto b'Pesach, we say Pesach, Matzah, Umaror. By Matzah, Umaror, we do point to those items, whereas by Pesach, we don't point to the item, whatever is there to represent the Pesach, because of this fear. Amra Papa, Dafka Bar. That's only true about the meat. Avachit Eila. When you're talking about wheat or grains, that's not a problem to say that it's for Pesach or Zula Pesach, because as people might think, oh, you're being Makdish the wheat to use that money to pay for a Korban HaPesach, That's the fear that we don't worry about, because the mint of the peskok amar. Because when a person does that, he doesn't mean that he wants to use the monetization of this item to buy a korban. He means that he needs this grain to be used for Pesach. So he's putting it away so it doesn't get wet. It doesn't have a problem of chometz. So since that is a reasonable assumption that people would make, we don't worry about it being an issue of kodashim. Ubasar lo. Wait a minute. Basar lo, is it really restricted, this meat, or from eating meat in this way or pointing to it? Meitave, don't we have a story in the Tosefta, which is Amar Rabbi Yossi Todus Ish Romi? This individual was in Rome, and he had the minhag of the people of Rome to eat roasted goats, or really it's kids here because they have to be ben shana, on the night of the Pesach. They ate, basically, the kid, as Rashi says here, Rosh HaKrav, they roasted it the way they would roast a Korban Pesach. They simulated a Korban Pesach on the night. They didn't really bring a Korban Pesach, but the meat that they ate at the Leila Seder simulated that, and they brought these Megidim Mekulasim, the word Mekulas comes from the word of a helmet that's used by Goliath, and it's because the way that it's roasted is that they put the innards of the animal around it, and then they roast it. So that's why it's called the Gedim Mekulas. But that's the way that you did the Korban HaPesach v'zman HaMikdash. Shalchulo, l'chamim sentemim elei todus ata, gzrani alecha nidui. If it was not for the fact that you were todus, we would put you into nidui for the fact that you're engaging the people in this minog. That really leads to a serious problem of looking like Kodeshim Bachutz. Shatam achil tiso Kodeshim Bachutz. Kodeshim sal kadatcha. He's not really feeding them Kodeshim. Elayim akam rov leachil tiso Kodeshim Bachutz. It's close. It looks like it. It's very on the edge here because you're doing it or practicing what was done to the Korban of Pesach, even though you're not doing it to Pesach. It looks like a Pesach and it could easily come to that mistake. So Gemara says, Mikulas in. The only problem here is because it was Mikulas. That he roasted it in the way that it was done for the Pesach. Shame Mikulas lo. But if it wasn't roasted in that way, it wouldn't be a problem. So why do we have a problem with the Korban of Pesach, the night of Pesach, eating roasted meat in general? It only seems to be if it was done exactly like the way the Korban Pesach was done. Mikulas lo shna. Amar lo shna lo amar. Now the difference is that if it's roasted in the manner that the Korban Pesach was roasted, doesn't matter if he says Zu Pesach or he doesn't say Zu Pesach. That's problematic no matter what. Sheinu Mikulas, if it's not roasted, then Perush in, lo perush lo. Then only if he explicitly states it is it a problem. If he doesn't state it, it's not a problem. So we had this statement before by Rav Yehuda who said that there's a problem about speaking to Basar and calling it a Pesach on the night of Pesach. So we thought that was the problem, naming it. Then we bring Teodoshi's Romi who says that the only problem, or for that, it seems to be the only problem is that you roast it the way that it was done like the Korban of Pesach. So Gemara reconciles between those two and says, well, it depends. If it's Mikulas, if it's roasted the way the Korban Pesach was roasted, then it's asur no matter what. Doesn't matter if you say something, don't say something, it's problematic. On the other hand, when it comes to the other meats on that night, or other roasted meats on that night, then only if you say that Zu Pesach is it problematic. But to stam, eat the meat, it's not problematic. And that's why they had minhagim, different minhagim in different places, whether to eat it or not. They can eat it, but you're not permitted, even in the places where you're permitted to eat the roasted meat on the night of Pesach, you're not permitted to say Zo Pesach. Rav Acha matni lo lahamat nitan bi Rabbi Shimon. Rav Acha said over this, right there with Rabbi Shimon. As opposed to it being Rabbi Yossi, he said that it was Rabbi Shimon, because the brayta that we just brought, Amar Rabbi Yossi told us Yishromi, over here he says that that wasn't Amar Rabbi Yossi, but rather Amar Rabbi Shimon. Now the Gemara says, I am Bishlam Alaman de Tani like Rabbi Yossi Nechon. According to one who says that it was Rabbi Yossi, it makes sense. Alaman de Matnila ke Rabbi Shimon mi Nechon. If you put Rabbi Shimon as the author, why does it make sense? Vatanan. Rabbi Shimon says that when you come to donate, here it's a case of a mincha. Person says, Harai minchat seorim. Person says that I'm going to bring a mincha of seorim. Well, there's no mincha in the Mikdash that comes from seor, except there's two exceptions. There's the Mincha of the Sota and the Mincha to Omer, but neither of those are brought by a private individual on a voluntary basis. So here this person is donating or saying that he's going to bring a Mincha of Sorim to the Mikdash, which doesn't exist. All his Menachot are made out of Chitim. So when he says that, the question is, what is his obligation? So there are those that say, the Chachamim, that say that Tfos Loshon Rishon, that we go after his first statement. He already said, Harei Alai Mincha. Harei Alai Mincha already obligates him. When he said Sorim, afterwards he comes to change his mind and modify it, doesn't matter. Because he already obligated himself in a mincha, and he has to bring a mincha of chitim. Rabbi Shimon over there says he's patur, because shelo yitnadev gedere mitnavim. Because when he made his statement was not the normal way to donate. And since it's not the normal way to donate, it doesn't take effect. So over here also, when you're talking about the gedim and gulas, according to Rabbi Yossi, I can make sense of that. I can make heads or tails out of that, because it would be Kodesh if he made it or said that this was Pesach, or he acted in this way, he made it a Gdi Mikdlas. According to Rabbi Shimon, this isn't the way to make Kodashim. This isn't the normal way to donate to the Mikdash or bring a korban of Pesach, so it shouldn't have been a problem. So Rabbi Yossi believes, Apig Mar Darav Adam Nitpas. The person is held accountable not only for the first thing he said, but also the latter part of his statement. But over here, where his first statement was, Hare Alay Minkla, that already obligated him. When he says, Minas Silrim, he tried to modify that or change his mind, we don't allow it to take effect. So there, it doesn't take effect. But Rabbi Shimon says, wait a minute, it does take effect, because he holds like Rabbi Yossi that it's Tofes, both the first statement and the latter statement are Tofes, but he also says he's Mitnadev, Shloka Derech Mitnadvim, and that's why it doesn't take effect. So therefore, he's not, oh, he doesn't have to bring any Mikla. So over here as well, in our case of the Korban of Pesach, then why, according to Rabbi Shimon, do you worry about Gedi Mikulas? Because that's not Kederech HaMitnadvim. On the other hand, for Rabbi Yossi, who says, Afik Marad Vrav Adam Nitpas, then over here, he doesn't have that qualification of Kederech HaMitnadvim, so it could be problematic with Gedi Mikulas. So the one who says that that story about Todos Yishromi is authored by Rabbi Yossi makes sense. The one who says it's authored by Rabbi Shimon, we have a hard time reconciling that. According to the one who says it was written by Rabbi Yossi, is it really so easy? Rabbi Shimon b'shitad Rabbi Yossi amra. Rabbi Shimon's position is premised on the position of Rabbi Yossi. Damar af gemar dvarava dam nitpas. That we look at the entirety of the statement of the individual. Comes up in Tmurah. A person says that harei zeh tmurat ola ushlamim. Tries to exchange it for an ala ushlamim. Rabbi Meir over there says tfos lashon rishon. We go after his first statement. That's it. He tried to change his mind afterwards. It doesn't work. Rabbi Yossi says af gemar dvarava dam nitpas. Then we look at the entirety of his statement. He couldn't say that it's a shlamim and ola together. So he said them separately, but he meant for it to be both, and therefore it, for them will take effect. So that's Rabbi Yossi's position, that both take effect. Now in our case, where it's Hare Alay Minchat Seorim, that doesn't take effect because the Gemara Dvarav can't be reconciled with the first statement. So therefore we just take the first statement and drop the statement. But Rabbi Shimon says, no, we hold like Rabbi Yossi that both statements take effect, but it, since it was he mitnadev shaloka derech mitnadvim, that's what makes it problematic. So Mara says, my law, Rabbi Shimon, suffered like Rabbi Yossi. If Rabbi Shimon's position is premised on Rabbi Yossi, then Rabbi Yossi Nami suffered like Rabbi Shimon, that Rabbi Yossi also subscribes to Rabbi Shimon's position. Mara says, no. Rabbi Shimon suffered like Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Shimon holds like Rabbi Yossi. His position is built on Rabbi Yossi's position that Af Gmar Dvarav Adam Nitpas. But he adds on top of that that he's Mitnadev Shalo Kederach Mitnadvim. Below Rabbi Yossi suffered like Rabbi Shimon. But on the other hand, Rabbi Yossi doesn't hold like Rabbi Shimon. He holds that the Gemara Devarav Adam Nitpas, but he doesn't have this principle of Rabbi Shimon about Shalok Derech HaMitnadvim. See, Bailu, Todos Ishromi, Gavra Rabava. This Todos Ishromi, why were the Chachamim reluctant or reticent to put him into Nidoy? Was it because he was a big Chacham, he was a big Talmud Chacham, and it was a positive statement about him? Oh, Bali Gufim Abba. Or was he a bully? Was he someone who held a lot of political power, and therefore they were afraid to tangle with him? So Tashma, Odozu Dorash Todesh Yisromi. We have another statement from Todesh Yisromi, and here it's a drusha, which is, Mara Uchananya Mishael Ve'ezariyash Masru Atzmal Kedushat Hashem L'Kivshan Ha'esh. When Nebuchadnezzar comes and asks them to bow down to the Andarta, how come they refuse and they let themselves be thrown into the fire and give up their lives of Kedushat Hashem? So Rashi says over here, Shalo Dashu B'chai Bam, Shalo Yimot Bam. Why don't they have the principle that they must live, or they must not give up their lives for doing any mitzvah? We'll come back and discuss that issue in the Tosafot in a second. So now, how do they know this? Nasu kal v'chomer batzman mitzvardim. They made a kal v'chomer from the tzvardim in the Makkah and Mitzrayim. Ma tzvardim she'im mitzuvim ha'kedushat Hashem. They have no obligation to die al kedushat Hashem. Tibu, and it says there that they followed the instruction of Hashem. Uvau v'alu b'beitecha. Says that the tzvardim are going to come into your house. Ubetanu recha ubemisharutecha. They're going to your ovens, and they're going to your kneading troughs. Ematai misharot mitziot ezel tanur. When are the kneading troughs right by the oven? Aviomer b'shasha tanur cham. That's when the oven is hot. Because then they're going to take the bread from the kneading trough, put it right into the oven. So anu shemitzuvim akdushat Hashem achad kam v'kama. We who are nitzdavei akdushat Hashem, certainly we should have to give up our lives. Here the frogs are giving up their lives. They're going into the hot ovens. Because that's what Hashem asked for. So we who have the tzibu Hashem, we definitely should have to give up our lives. So therefore, it would indicate that Todos Yisromi was a Talmud Chacham or a positive character, because over here you see him making a drusha that is brought down in a braita. He actually helped provide parnosa for Talmidei Chachamim. He didn't necessarily give them money, but he allowed them to invest alongside of him in doing business. So he was able to help them make a living by having them invest alongside of him. Whoever provides business opportunities or investment opportunities for Talmidei Chachamim, Zocheh v'yoshev b'yeshiva shel ma'alah, then he gets the ranking of being entered into the yeshiva shel ma'alah, means that he's on an equal footing or an equal partner with those that actually learn. Shneamar b'tzela chachma b'tzela kesef, in the shadow of the wisdom, in the shadow of the kesef, of the money, meaning that those that provide the money so that the chachma can be there are on equal plane with those that have the tzela chachma. So those that go to yeshiva shel ma'alah and are beneficiaries of those that support them, the supporters of them also get the benefit of that learning or the stature of that learning. Now Tosafot does ask one question over here about Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Why did they give up their lives? Now if it was Bifrei Hester, if it was a public issue, then they're obligated to give up their lives. They have to give it up min adin, because Yehereg Valiyavur applies when it's Bifrei Hester for any mitzvah of the Torah. So that's number one. Now, if it wasn't a problem of violation of Avera, then why were they allowed to give up their lives? So Rabbeinu Tam suggests that the Andarta that Nebuchadnezzar asked them to bow down to was not really Avodah Zarah. It was a monument to the king, and technically they could bow down to it. So it wasn't a problem of Avodah Zarah, and therefore they were not obligated to give up their lives because it was Vahestio or because it was Avodah Zarah, because it wasn't Avodah Zarah. Now we have to ask the question then, why did they give up their lives? And that's this issue of the Kal V'chomer, that even though normally we would not ask someone to give up their life in that case, they felt it was important to give up their lives because they thought others would learn from them, that they were beam, and it was important for others to see that keeping the mitzvot is so important. So they did that on a voluntary basis, and that's what the Gemara is asking over here, Mara'u. What did they see in order to give up their lives? The Tosafot in the end backs away from that explanation and says the word palchan or palchu is only used really in worship, and therefore that term which is used by Hananiah, Mishael, Azariah makes it sound like it was Avodah Zarah and not Barta. The Reed gives an alternative answer which says that they could have run away, that they had the opportunity to run away beforehand and not stick around. Had they run away, then they wouldn't have been forced into this situation. So why did they not take the option to run away? And that was because here they wanted to Kadesh Shem Shemayim. That was the Kavachom they learned from the Tzvardim. Okay, we'll stop over here.